Here now for reaction, Lara Logan, Fox Nation host and 16-year Afghan war journalist. Lara, great to see you this evening. I want to get your reaction to everything that we know so far. We know that the State Department is saying it can't guarantee the safe passage to the airport. The Pentagon saying today it doesn't know how many more people need to get out of Afghanistan. So not really instilling a lot of confidence here, and it's leading people to suspect that we will be in Afghanistan at the mercy of the Taliban longer than August 31st. Your thoughts?
Well, we're already in Afghanistan at the mercy of the Taliban, right? That's what you're looking at. Because one of the most telling things that I have seen in the last few days is General Austin, Lloyd Austin's face, the Secretary of Defense, when he got that question from Helen Cooper at the New York Times. And, you know, she said, it sounds like we're at the mercy of the diplomacy, basically, of the Taliban, which is a staggering idea in the first place. Because these are the people that sheltered al-Qaeda, right? There is much complicit in 9/11 as al-Qaeda. And you saw the look on the Secretary of Defense's face. He wanted to, I mean, he looked to me like he wanted to explode. Because when he had to say those words, we don't have the capability to do this, what he was actually saying to you is, we don't have the political will to use our capability to do that. Because the United States military has extraordinary capability that goes way beyond what it takes to move Americans out of the country. But what he's saying is there isn't any political backing to do what it's going to take. We can't exercise our capability. And in fact, we're in a political trap here because we've made a political agreement with the Taliban, who are now apparently dictating to the world's superpower what they can and cannot do, even though they've broken their agreement over and over again. They've broken it. But the United States wants this so badly. They want the Taliban in power in Afghanistan so badly that they are not prepared to do anything that is going to make the Taliban say, you reneged on the deal and we're not delivering. Because what is actually happening here? The Taliban wants every Afghan that's heading to that airport. Because who are the people that have the most incentive to get out of the country? They are the ones who work for the government. They are the Afghan commandos, the special forces, and their families who are being hunted door to door by the Taliban. What we're not talking about when we're focused on this humanitarian disaster that is and diplomatic disaster that's unfolding before us is we're not talking about how the Taliban and al-Qaeda, by the way, their allies, have the biometrics of every Afghan that served in the armed forces. They have the names of all those who served the Afghan intelligence agencies. They have everything, and so that means so does Pakistan, because Pakistan controls everything that the Taliban do. The Taliban leadership is in Pakistan. The Taliban finances them. They recruit for them when they're wounded. Where do they go to be treated? They go across the border into Pakistan's hospitals, and they're treated for nothing in Pakistan. So Pakistan controls everything. That means Pakistan has access to everything. That means, why is Lloyd Austin, Joe Biden, why is nobody saying, hey, if we were taken by surprise, we know that Pakistan controls everything the Taliban does. So our ally Pakistan, they allowed us to be caught flat-footed. And we're not going to hold them to account for that. Wow. You know, there's so many holes to this story. It's falling apart by the second.
And President Biden, in his interview with ABC News, suggested, Lara, that he would make sure that every American got out safe. Now, surely it's going to take a little bit longer than expected. Do you think that he will pull the trigger and authorize the military forces that we need to be able to make that happen? It sounds like you don't.
Well, I never presume to know what the president of the United States is thinking or not thinking, right? But what I do, I mean, as a journalist, my job is to look at what we do know. Well, we do know that when the NSA was watching Taliban gather their forces, that we did nothing to stop them. We do know that when they took strategic ground, like the border crossing at Spin Bolbak with Pakistan, which was their main supply route that ensured an uninterrupted logistics chain for their invasion and offensive, right? We know that the NSA and the intelligence agencies and the military did nothing about that. They didn't stop it. We know that when the Taliban was going into those cities, when we could have bombed them, we could have used our military capability, the United States did not do that. We know that when we saw sensitive military equipment been handed over to the Chinese, when we saw that heading into Iran, the U.S. didn't use its military power to stop that. So based on the U.S.'s actions so far, there is zero indication nation that they are willing to use the military power that they have, the capability that they have. They may not have it right there in Afghanistan this second, as Lloyd Austin was saying, but these politicians and generals, you know, they know exactly how to parse their words, and they're very careful, because what he said is true. We don't have the capability right there, but we have it in the region, and we have it, you know, in the ability to exercise it anytime we want. But they're choosing not to. Why? Because what I learned from very reliable sources today is that, for example, one of the reasons you have this catastrophe at Kabul Airport is that the United States evacuated Bagram Air Base. They left themselves with only one option that they're not in control of fully. And that was a terrible idea. So whose idea was it? Well, actually, it was the Taliban's idea. They demanded that the United States evacuate Bagram Air Base, which is the largest base. And when the U.S. did that, we lost the capacity for air support. We crippled the Afghan Air Force. We lost the signals intelligence. We know there's a lot of capabilities that go with holding that very significant strategic ground that we gave up. And the Taliban wanted us to give it up. Why? They said this is a symbol of American power, and we want to be sure that you're leaving. And the generals, the military opposed it. The State Department pushed for it. Zomal Khalilzad engineered it, and it was a gift to the Taliban. And the impact, the strategic impact, was so great that many of those Afghan cities that you saw fall in such a short period of time, that was because of the evacuation in the middle of the night of Bagram Air Base. But make no mistake, you do not take over a country, even the Taliban doesn't take over a country in 11 days. Yeah. This happened over a long period of time, and the U.S. military didn't miss it. They didn't do anything about it because the combined U.S. government, the political decision was that we're getting out and we're making this deal with the Taliban that we are under no pressure to make because we could withdraw anytime we want. And instead of getting everyone out before you handed over Bagram Air Base, what did you do? You gave away some of your most strategic capability and ground to your enemies, and then you put yourself at their mercy. I mean, I don't think anybody is that stupid.
It's amazing the way you describe it, because there are so many people saying this administration had no strategy, but really they do have a strategy. It's just, it's unthinkable to many people. Lara, thank you so much for laying it out for us. Really appreciate your time tonight. And I want to make sure you all watch part one of the new season of Lara Logan Has No Agenda. That's 21st Century Terrorism Revealed. This is at Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. You can also watch it on FoxNation.com after it airs live.
Hello, everyone. I'm Greg Gutfeld, along with Dagan McDowell, Geraldo Rivera, Jesse Waters, and a Grapers Her Yoga Ball. Dana Perino, it's 5 o'clock in New York City. This is The 5. First, he was in denial. Now, President Biden is apparently delusional about the disaster in Afghanistan. While the Taliban has taken over the country, President Biden seems confused by mixing up dates and claiming no one has been killed.
Still a lot of pandemonium outside the airport.
Well, there is, but look, but no one's being killed right now. God forgive me if I'm wrong about that, but no one's being killed right now. We got 1,000 somewhere, 1,200 out yesterday, a couple thousand a day, and it's increasing. We're going to get those people out.
But we've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
What did you think when you first saw those pictures?
What I thought was we have to gain control of this. We have to move this more quickly. We have to move in a way in which we can take control of that airport. And we did.
Here's the reality on the ground. 12 people have reportedly died so far. New video shows people running for their lives after the Taliban opened fire. There's panic and chaos outside the country's single evacuation point at the Kabul airport. And mothers are handing their children over the wall to soldiers to get them out. But President Biden says what is happening was inevitable.
Sounds like you think we should have gotten out a long time ago.
We should have.
And accept the idea that it was going to be messy no matter what.
Well, by the way, what would be messy?
The exit.
If we had gotten out a long time ago, getting out would be messy no matter when it occurred.
Well, Dana, that was there's so many contradictions and differences between old Joe and new Joe, and his general saying they didn't see it coming, but he said it was going to happen no matter what. It's just like, it's no longer a question of whether we should leave or stay. The question is, how awful was this? plant or not plant.
I was thinking today about, you know, in the 70s, I talk about malaise.
Yeah.
Right? And do you remember the late Charles Krauthammer wrote a piece a few years before he died called Decline is a Choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking a little bit about that today because when this morning I watched the interview live at 7 a.m., and when President Biden said, well, nobody's dying, you know, well, correct me if I'm wrong, and knock wood, he's knocking wood.
Yeah.
I was like, Americans don't knock wood.
Yeah.
We knock heads.
Yes.
And I don't understand the point of sending 8,000 more troops in there to help get people out if we can't get people out.
Yeah.
If you can't get people to the airport. You have reports that French and British special forces are, they're not waiting.
Yeah.
They're going in to try to find their people. He does seem disconnected. I don't want the military to get demoralized.
Mm-hmm.
We need them to be strong, but it seems to me that what I saw today at the Pentagon is that they want to do more, but the commander-in-chief is not authorizing it.
Right. Oof. You know, there was a, Dagan, there was a poll done by Mission Roll Call. It's a veterans advocacy group of 1.2 million vets, and they found that 71% found that this recent mess has caused them personal sadness. Mm-hmm. So it's because of all the work they put in and seeing it end this
way. But they have to know that every American sees the disaster created by Joe Biden and that every American is deeply grateful for what, for the most part, has been a counterterrorism operation in Afghanistan to deny a haven to al-Qaeda. And that was the, it wasn't nation building, that was the reason we were there. And we are deeply grateful for that. And we know firsthand, like I've been contacting friends of mine who served and just trying to reach out to them, which is what we all do, because we have empathy and we have hearts and we have souls and we believe in prayer. That being said, you mentioned new Joe versus old Joe. I think that there's just one Joe. When he speaks, it's a debacle. When he doesn't speak, it's a debacle. He's plumbing new depths of moronery in a career, what a 50-year career in government, highlighted by the fact that he opposed the raid to kill Osama bin Laden. Andy McCarthy once said, mediocrity would have been something to strive for in Joe Biden's prime. Mm. One more thing in terms of finances. I heard Geraldo speaking earlier about the opium.
Yeah.
The Taliban controls the largest opium operation in the world. Well, we're also giving up treasure and power to China because China is quickly moving into Afghanistan. Afghanistan has one of the largest reserves of rare earth metals,
right,
which we need for electric cars and solar panels and wind turbines. China already controls 80% of the production of rare earth metals. They're going in delighted to offer mining assistance to the Taliban. They're just beginning to develop this relationship. But again, that hands money to the Taliban, potentially trillions of dollars in the long run, and it hands more power to China. So it's a lose-lose for the United States again.
Yeah. You know, Jesse, we're talking about how I don't want us to become like how CNN was with Trump, where every day it was the walls are closing in, you know, tick, 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 boom, something bad's going to, they became obsessed. But it's like, so you try to measure the criticism of Biden, but it's hard at this point.
Because here's the truth. The president has stranded thousands of Americans in a war zone, and the only way for them to get out is an airport that's surrounded by an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
An enemy that's committing atrocities every single day on camera for the world to see. And I don't think the president understands that this is going to dominate the news cycle until every single American is evacuated safely. And sadly, he's created a kill zone in the military. They say that's where every single person that wants to leave has to funnel through the same route that's controlled by who? The enemy. So they're going to block them. They're going to kidnap them. They're going to shake them down, or they might kill them. So now we have a Afghan hostage crisis where Americans are going to have to pay bribes to the Taliban to get out. The U.S. government might be paying them. Cash is king. Private entities could be paying them. We don't know, but we're going to have to be paying terrorists to evacuate Americans. Now, I know we want to get Afghans out, too, but I want to get Americans out. That should be a priority. And right now, I think only 300 Americans left.
Today.
300. Thousands of Afghans have got only 300 today. And we don't know how many Americans are there. They say 10,000, 15,000. We don't know. And we don't have the capability to go out and extract them. And all Joe Biden needs to say to make everyone feel confident is that the United States is going to do everything within our power, no matter how long it takes, to get all of our people home safely. Do you think this would ever happen with Donald Trump? Donald Trump would never leave people behind in a hostile country like this. He was renowned for bringing back hostages. That was one of the best accomplishments in 4 years. So the New York Times is reporting that Joe Biden was briefed throughout the summer that there were mass desertions going on within the Afghan army. Collapse was rapidly occurring, and the Taliban takeover may have been imminent. Now, he didn't do anything about that, didn't change his plan, went out and lied to the American people, said everything's going to be just fine. I don't foresee it happening. So the question is, did the commander-in-chief lie to the American people, strand thousands of Americans behind enemy lines, abandon billions of dollars of lethal military equipment just to get a political photo op to pull out on 9/11. So Republicans, when they take the House back, they're going to have to decide, is this high crime or misdemeanor?
Hey, Sean Hannity here. Hey, click here to subscribe to Fox News YouTube page and catch our hottest interviews and most compelling analysis. You will not get it anywhere else.
You know, we've talked about prayer before on this program, but I have never been more clear that it will only be through prayer that this works and this happens. Let me just give you the situation at the Kabul airport. At the Kabul airport, your plane cannot be on the ground for more than 30 minutes. Okay. There's no fuel in all of Kabul. There's no fuel at the airport. So if you land a plane, you better have fuel to get back out. The perimeter is surrounded by the Taliban, and they are constantly fighting the people. It's exactly the chaos that was happening under our planes the other day. It's just happening on the other side of the wall. And that chaos is happening because the Taliban is beating people. There were clips that were heartbreaking that were coming out yesterday of people screaming to our Marines at the top of the wall. And the Marines have a list of people that can come in, but they can't get through the gates. They can't get through. Heartbreaking videos of children being passed over the wall so at least the children can get out. This is shameful. Shameful for the most powerful military in the world. Or are we? Maybe we've just given up on that. This is absolutely shameful. Because we could change this. Let me tell you something. Donald Trump, if you're listening, please make a statement and we will all do our best to get it out to the rest of the world. You just say, look, I may run again. And if I do and I become president, I know who each one of you Taliban worms are. And you will be dead within my first week. There is no reason why our government can't say to these people, knock it off, or you're going to cause us to come back with 50,000 troops and kick your ass. We can't convince the Taliban to leave the people alone at the gates. We can't even get our own citizens out. Oh, my gosh. You know, when I said to you a long time ago, there come a point where you don't recognize your country, I never thought of this. I never thought it would be this. Yesterday, Joe Biden. Listen out, Joe Biden. Do you know that when our airplanes took off and those people were holding on, did you know that we had to meet those planes with doctors? And not because of the people who had tried to get on the plane, but for the crew and the ground crew that met the plane, because there were frozen bodies underneath the wheels. There were limbs and human debris smushed in all of the gears and all of the hydraulics. Did you know that? Now that you do know that and you have that image in your head, I want you to listen to Joe Biden respond to George Stephanopoulos when he brings up the planes that had human remains in it. Listen to what he says.
We've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
What did you think when you first saw?
Stop. That was 4 or 5 days ago. Oh, well, I'm sorry. Aren't you part of the party that's bringing up slavery that happened 200 years ago? That was 5 days ago? Yeah, well, you haven't taken responsibility. The buck stops here doesn't really mean anything if there are no consequences. You're saying that there is nothing you could have done better. You're saying that it was as good as it could get. That was 5 days ago. Why do you keep harping on that? Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry, Joe. Some of us have a memory longer than 5 days ago. I know for you that might seem a long time because you are so senile. I'm surprised every day you remember your president. That was 5 days ago. Oh, that was ancient history. Why are you harping on it? Oh, my gosh. And what does George Stephanopoulos do? What did you first think of when you saw those that long time ago, 5 days ago? How is no one indignant? How is no one saying, excuse me? That was 5 days ago? That's how you respond to that?
I should also point out that in those 4 to 5 days, he wasn't available to talk to anyone. He came out and made one speech and took no questions. This is the first interview he's done since any of that happened.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's appropriate to ask about and talk to him about.
And when he gave a speech yesterday, cut 9. This is what he said.
You know, we're not going to sit by as governors try to block and intimidate educators protecting our children. For example, if a governor wants to cut the pay of a hardworking
education... Stop. I can't listen to it. You're not going to stand by as governors exercise their 10th Amendment right, but you think everything in Afghanistan is going peachy? You will stand by as the Taliban embarrasses, humiliates the United States of America, flushes down the crapper everything we did for 20 years. And you know what? That doesn't bother me as much as you standing by where women and children are shot just a few yards away from our military. But you're not gonna stand for, you won't just stand by those governors exercising their 10th Amendment. How dare you? Listen to me. This is not us. And if we don't stand in peace, in love, with goodness and service and malice toward none in our hearts, if we don't begin to stand up right now, there will be nothing left of America. Do you know why Afghanistan is happening? Because as you believe, so shall it be. That is a universal principle. As you believe, so shall it be. Well, what does everyone in the administration and now all those leading the Pentagon, what is it they believe? They believe that America is full of racists and bad people, that our military is only done bad. So this is just another notch on the headboard. That's all it is. This is just another bad thing America did. And America did this long ago. So let's get them out of there because it doesn't matter. We're the cause of it. That's what they believe. That is not what I believe. I have always believed our military was right and righteous. We have done, not because of the military, but because of our leadership in Washington over the years, we have done bad things. But the American people didn't necessarily know it or weren't clear on it. There is no excuse now. We are very clear on what is happening. We are very clear who the bad guys are right now. And quite honestly, we're doing nothing to stop them. Not on my watch, not on my time. Not on your watch, not on your time. Not to stand is to stand. Not to speak is to speak. We have people right now over there that are doing everything they can. They are risking their lives, knowingly going into dangerous situations, trying to find this list of 5,000 people, these Christians, trying to find them. Most of them now are in hiding. Yesterday, they were warned that if they are caught, they will be burned alive. We have people with nothing to gain going in voluntarily to try to find these people one by one. It's not like we have them all in one place. With the way things are looking today, I mean, it will be a miracle. I'm telling you, it will be a miracle if we get 100 of these people out. It will be a miracle. I know what's happening on the ground. I know what our plan is. And God is the only answer. We must do all that we can do, and He will finish it. But be very clear. Be very clear. It is not you and your donation. It is not me and my voice. It is not the operators. If we get people out of there, all praise must go to Him because it's impossible. First, I want you just to imagine for a second that you are a 20-something. You're in Afghanistan. You've lived most of your life under the influence of the United States. Maybe you just started a family. Maybe you're a Christian. But heck, you could be an agnostic or a Muslim that just doesn't side with the Taliban. Or you could be literally the one Jew left in Afghanistan. Just a few weeks ago, you went to sleep holding on to the hope that you and your family may truly be free. Maybe you worked for the Americans because you believe in what they said. You believe in the idea of all men and all women. All people are created as individuals, and they have rights. You had never heard that before. Nobody in your family had ever heard that before. That was a foreign concept until about 20 years ago. Now imagine suddenly the Taliban takes control of your neighborhood. You don't remember them. You were too young when they were in charge. Heck, you might not have even been born. You only know of them because of what others told you, those much older. Gosh, was life really like that? And now these people come in and they're saying all the right things. No revenge. Respect for women. Don't worry if you worked for the Americans. But thank God you still respect your elders and you know better. In a blink of an eye, they have taken your capital. They slam their boots on their desks of your government buildings, and overnight you went from an ally of freedom to a traitor of the Taliban. The last few nights you've not been able to sleep. You're concerned for your son, because your son might be taken by the Taliban and trained as their soldier if they just don't kill you and your family first. You're afraid for your daughter, who's doing well in school. But she's not going to be able to go to school soon. Your daughter is 12. When she turns 12, she can be used as an incentive for the Taliban soldiers. They just announced it yesterday. Comfort wives. God, is that the way your little girl is going to be sold into slavery? To comfort the soldiers? How about your wife? Does the Taliban know you worked for the Americans? Do they know that you believe in some of these things? God forbid, do they know you converted to Christianity, a high offense? Your neighbors know, but they're your friends. I mean, right? They have the same fears. Will they turn you in to save their daughter, their son, their family? Would you turn them in if you were offered the chance? No. No. You hope not, but do you really know? All you know is that your life is on the line. You know your family, your children's lives, their physical and spiritual safety is in grave danger. Why did the Americans leave? You saw the videos of your fellow citizens dying while desperately grasping onto the airplanes. You've watched women in your own town take their own lives rather than live under the Taliban. The America you worked with, all of its values are gone now. They have vanished. You were promised, but you haven't heard any plans for rescue. You're alone, waiting for the knock on the door. You and your family bear the guilt of an American, but you never had the privilege of being one. Here at home, oh, wow, we're caring about so many important things. Gender rights, and we want to make sure that we get our pronouns right. Oh my gosh, you don't know what it's like to be an American. Jeez, it's horrible. You know, I can't buy a new car because the chips. Can't get the chips.
Oh, and those Democrats and those Republicans. Oh, my gosh. And have you heard? The governor of Texas has COVID. Well, it serves him right. I'll tell you that right now. What is that? Oh, the people left in Afghanistan? Here we are at home watching our nation burn. Watching our nation humiliated. Our superpower status is on the edge. And personally, I don't care if we're a superpower. I'm sick of being the world's policeman. However, I'm also apparently smarter than the current administration. You can't leave a giant vacuum. A vacuum to be filled by the dictators and the theocrats and the thugs and the mobs and the Chinese communist killers to fill. And that's exactly who will fill our void. But what do? We talk to each other, right? Oh, I can't wait for the latest podcast. Oh, he's going to give it to him. Because the government is so corrupt. I don't trust anybody in our own government anymore. Clearly, they're not prosecuting the bad guys. There's nothing else we can do. I mean, if we speak out, we're labeled terrorists by the same people that just allowed real terrorists to take control of Afghanistan. They gave them the keys to the doors to rape and take helpless young children as young as 12. To give them to their soldiers as gifts for their sexual gratification. Oh, but don't worry. They will marry them in some sick, perverted version of God's law. This isn't God. This is evil. And damn it, we all know it. We know what's happening all over the globe, including our own country, is evil, and it is sweeping the globe. Why? Because what do? Too many of us are falling silent. We are silent. What are you waiting for? Who, may I ask you, are you waiting for? Who do you think will step up and fill this void? Who do you think is going to come to the world's rescue? There's no Churchill. There's not even an FDR. The world is led by clowns, Biden and Trudeau. Here's the thing I want you to remember. Unlike the thousands of Afghanis who believed in us, who helped us, we have the privilege of being American, but far too few of us know we, not the Biden administration, not the government, but we will bear the guilt of being an American. You already are being told you're guilty because you're an American. What more could they add to it? We are the ones that bear the guilt. Not the ones in Washington. They'll never bear any guilt. The buck will never actually stop there. It falls on us. So what do? Oh, well, we can elect. You know, elections are coming. What do when a government doesn't represent you? When they lie, when they neglect their duties, when they abandon our allies? What do? What do you do? Watching our national leaders completely destroy 20 years of work. It is natural to wonder, who have we become? I'll tell you who we've become and who we must become again. We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome to the News Today with Jeff Ahern. I'm your host, Jeff Ahern. Today's top story. From the speed the Taliban is retaking cities in Afghanistan, it appears the only problem that they're facing is who to carpool with to get to the next city. Great job, Joe, pulling out our troops and leaving the country to a group that up until last week was still using stone tools and treats their camels better than they do their women. And to our Afghan allies, Biden has not forgotten you. He's planning an airdrop of sneakers in Kabul because there's nothing worse than having to run for your life in flip-flops. These poor people are going to die now because they were foolish enough to believe that after helping us, we wouldn't simply abandon them. This is such an awful decision by our Weekend at Bernie's president, or whoever is actually running the country during the 12 to 14 hours a day that he sleeps. It does make for a fun game, though. I give you a murder statistic, and you have to decide if I'm talking about Afghanistan or a Democrat-run city. And as our former allies are slaughtered, the only thing woke Democrats will demand is that during the bloodbath, everybody wear a mask.
To understand today, I want to take you back to May 12th, 1940. It was the day Adolf Hitler began an invasion of France. 10 days later, the evil of Nazism had stormed across the country and reached the English Channel. 10 days. Does any of this sound familiar? The Allied forces were forced back to Dunkirk. Disaster and defeat. It was inevitable. On May 23rd, General Brooke, who was the leader of the Allied drawback to Dunkirk, wrote in his journal, "Nothing but a miracle can save us now." Well, in an effort just to get some of the troops out, on May 26th, Churchill gave in to the idea of evacuation and ordered the beginning of Operation Dynamo. As the campaign began, Churchill expected the evacuation from Dunkirk. It would rescue maybe 45,000 men at most. The closest harbor was blocked with war-sunk ships. The rescue had to be made on the shallow beaches, and those large boats couldn't reach them. The Navy was stuck. They would need small vessels to transport the troops from the beaches to the larger ships. Well, the request went out, and within hours, 220 light warships, 650 civilian vessels were on the water. Some of the crew, Navy personnel, but many were manned by the civilian owners and crew. They were moms and dads, brothers and sisters. The members of the small armada has become known as little ships. As the Allied troops sat on the beach, on the shore, in dread, they looked out and saw nothing. No ships, except a shattered French destroyer, is what one of them wrote. Then, all of a once, they couldn't believe what they saw coming over the horizon. There, coming towards them, a mass of dots that filled the sea. An army of little ships. Little points of light coming to their rescue. In a hail of bombs and artillery fire, this little group of ragtag people, just regular citizens, sailed through the ocean mines and the torpedoes with little or no rest, day after day, night after night. Plainly marked hospital ships full of British and French wounded were an easy target for the Nazi bombs, but the men and women never faltered on their commitment. When the mission was complete, some 198,000 British and 140,000 French troops were saved, a total of 338,000 souls. Now, how did they do it? They did it because at the time, the people of England and the leadership of England clearly knew the difference between right and wrong. They clearly had faith. Churchill had faith in the British people, and the people had faith in their God, and they still knew what was right, and they did it. It was faith and devotion and courage of everyday men and women just like you that saved all those people. This is our Dunkirk. Each of us have to be willing to sail our own little ship into the storm of the battle to save those who have been stranded and left behind by our own government as the Taliban takes over Afghanistan, as they stand at the gates of our airport with our Marines' hands tied, beating women and children and shooting them at the gates. Not on my watch. This is not America. The government is not America. You are America. Each of us doing what we know is right. Today, my government does not represent me. Not by any stretch of the imagination. You want to say that America is such a bad place? Well, you are now in charge, and you are leading one of the worst moments in modern American history. Not my name. I will do everything I can personally to help save the lives of people that we have left behind to suffer at the hands of madmen. There is no U.S. coalition coming to the rescue, even though, how dare you, Pentagon officials, tell us there's nothing you can do. What the hell are my taxes for? How much have I spent in taxes to buy the sophisticated equipment and pay our soldiers and provide all of the jet fuel so you can get your ass over to a trouble spot immediately anywhere in the world? Don't tell me it can't be done. This is the time when people stand in the gap. This is the time when Americans get together and do it. This audience has risen to the occasion over and over again. Hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, fire, children at the border, Christians in the Middle East. In 2008, I feel I was prompted to, and I'm quoting what I heard in my prompting, build the framework of hope. I didn't even know what that meant other than things are going to get very bad. And so I started Mercury One and the Nazarene Fund. I think they are the framework of hope. You have been willing to be the light in the darkness again and again. Just as the people on those little ships, you have gone forward with little or no rest, day after day, night after night, and you're rising up together again. I have told you since September 11th, 2001, I have a feeling about this audience that in the end, it will be this audience that saves us. I realize that I may have misunderstood. You're not just going to save us. I think you and the others that will join us may just save the world. It's not easy to take on so much in the face of so many mistakes and current obstacles. It feels as though we're faced with one crisis after another, and many of them are crises that have been brought on to us by our leaders who are trying to take away our freedom, not just abandoning people overseas. Evil men and women who want to snuff out the brightness and the hope and the glory that is the mission of the United States of America. You know what led to Dunkirk could be viewed as a series of crises as well. Each one was tackled and resolved only to be replaced with another. But mankind's refusal to allow the darkness of discouragement and disillusionment to take their God-given light and free will beat the relentless sequence of calamity. It will happen. Our collective ability to improvise and overcome obstacles will allow us to rise up like the tiny armada and become a mass of dots that fill the seas and the skies and come to the rescue of those who need us. Yesterday, I gave you an impossible task. An impossible task. I asked you to help me raise $20 million by Friday so I could secure the aircraft and the helicopters and the teams to be able to get 5,000 Christians that are marked with death and yesterday received notice from the Taliban that any of these people will be burned alive. In less than 24 hours, you gave 9,334,652.24. The framework of hope, you are not alone. It is not just you. I've never seen anything like this before. I don't think any one audience has ever done that. I have until tomorrow to raise the second half. You've given so much. The Nazarene Fund has put boots on the ground to do what needs to be done to save the thousands of Christians who are in grave danger. We have the helicopters and the planes standing by. This is a logistical nightmare. And my greatest fear is that in our efforts to help, we may lead the Taliban right to these people. But they are marked for death. And as long as we have the money, as long as our Marines can hold the airports, and as long as there is a Christian left in hiding, we will do what we need to do, but we need God's help. I have a list of the names of people. I have the list of the people that are trying to make their way to our rendezvous points. It's bigger than Schindler's List. I wondered this morning what this list will be remembered as, what this list should be called. And there was only one thing that came to mind. The Nazarene's List. Because he is the only one that's going to be able to get them out. We need divine providence like we've never needed it before. Time is running out. People are clinging to the hope that someone will remember them and arise and save them from the blackness that is the Taliban. Even if you have given yesterday, could I ask you to give just a little bit more? I doubled my donation today. If you have friends, urge them to give. This is just this audience. This is all the only, you're the only ones. Ask your family to give their birthday or Christmas presents early and send it to the Nazarene Fund. This is your time. This is our time. Tell everyone you know. And even as we complete this mission, the war against darkness will not be over. Evil is on the march. When Dunkirk was over, Churchill gave a strong pronouncement. He said, "We must be very careful not to assign this deliverance to the attributes of a victory. We have to continue, and we shall fight the darkness on the seas and oceans. We shall fight it with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our land, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender until God's good time When the new world with all of its power and might steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old. That last line was a call to us, who had not yet joined World War II. Our call today is to our silent friends and neighbors, to our compliant family members, to our frightened friends. And most importantly, we call to the generations who come behind us. Believe in freedom. Believe in America and its greatness. What you're seeing on television of what America has done to the people in Afghanistan is not who we are. Know that. Believe that, and never, ever surrender.